This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker.
A race-based threat over weeds in a yard is part of our series Living Black in Bloomington Normal.
People are talking, they think you're dealing drugs, and I always tell them you're not, you're a teacher. But, you know, I can make things really hard for you. Is it the exact word she said?
Hear from high school math teacher Brandon Thornton. Plus, a black English teacher says he felt the protagonists of his childhood stories and comics had to be white to appeal. The first tenured black professor at Lincoln College says she lost friends after the George Floyd killing because they do not understand the rage and loss that resulted. And a woman who felt othered in junior high when the teacher asked her her thoughts about what our people did to your people shares how that experience shaped her life.
All that and a news update on the way. This is Sound Ideas on WGLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from WGLT listeners. Join the community of informed news consumers who listen to WGLT and also support it financially. Learn more about how you can support WGLT's nonprofit public service mission at WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Let's run down some of the day's top stories. The Normal Police Department and McLean County Coroner's Office are asking for public help as they investigate the death of a man whose body was found in a wooded area in North Normal. Police were called to an area near Greenbrier Drive and Hershey Road shortly after noon for a report of a body found. Yoder says her office has not yet identified that person. She did not say whether authorities suspect foul play. Police posted on social media Friday that a 55-year-old man, Clevester Gaither, had recently been reported missing. According to the department, no one has had contact with Gaither since April. A McLean County woman in her 60s has died after contracting COVID-19. She is the county's 16th coronavirus-related death and the first since early July. McLean County health officials also report a new one-day record with 38 coronavirus cases today and a new seven-day record with 131 cases. County Health Department Administrator Jessica McKnight says recent coronavirus patients have a greater number of people they have come in contact with compared to the start of the pandemic.
We definitely are seeing now with people being more active out and about that they definitely have more contacts. So for us, that's definitely it's more time consuming in the contact tracing.
McKnight says most who test positive now have around 10 contacts to trace for possible COVID exposure. Tutors are in high demand now that Bloomington Normal Public Schools have moved all instruction online to start the year. Director of Sylvan Learning Center in Normal, Julia Cressy, says they've been flooded with calls from parents since District 87 and Unit 5 announced their plans to start online.
They're saying it didn't work. It didn't work in April and March, April and May, and I've tried to do things over the summer. It's not working. We've got to have somebody who is engaging.
Sylvan will offer after-school tutoring in person and online. Sylvan will also offer daytime instruction for parents who need child care. A former McLean County prosecutor who left in 2018 to join the U.S. Attorney's Office is returning to Bloomington as a defense lawyer with Finnegan and Rinker. Adam Grist served as first assistant state's attorney for the county for 3 years until his departure for the federal post. During his 11 years with the county, Grist handled several high-profile murder, drug, and child abuse cases. He'll be a partner at the renamed Finnegan, Rinker & Grist, heading up the newly formed federal litigation practice. The switch from prosecution to defense will put Grist on the opposite side of the courtroom from former colleagues in both state and federal court. State figures show recreational marijuana sales in Illinois total more than $300 million since the start of the year. The Illinois Department of Finance and Professional Regulation and New Frontier data report July cannabis sales were the highest of the year at $61 million. That number is up from $47.6 million in June and a touch over $44 million in May. The Chicago Tribune reports one reason for the increase in sales could be the customer ability to order online, which many dispensaries started to keep the lines down. This is Sound Ideas on 89.1 FM WGLT and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The WGLT news series Living Black in Bloomington Normal has ended. To mark this effort to show how African Americans in Central Illinois experience their lives, we're bringing you some of the most notable of the roughly two dozen interviews. The first one first aired in June. Normal Community High School English teacher Christopher Belt is a self-described nerd. At a young age, he was into fantasy and comic books. He even wrote his own fantasy stories. Belt speaks with John Norton, saying even at that young age, the main characters in his stories were white.
I don't know. I remember in making that design choice for a young author's story I wrote for second grade, I felt like I understood my main character was supposed to be white.
Did you have an understanding of any repercussions that might have happened if you hadn't done that?
The story wouldn't be as well received or received by as many people.
What does that do to you internally to even know that at a young age?
The constant inferiority complex battle begins is what happens. You're constantly coaching yourself up and reassuring yourself that you're good enough, you're worthwhile, you're deserving of admiration. I do feel like it's a lifelong battle with an inferiority complex.
How did you view systemic racism as you're getting older, and how did that affect how you either viewed yourself or how you dealt with things?
So mainly, first off, it's speech. I can speak the white folks' English very fluently. I know to code switch. And because of that, I'm oftentimes perceived as someone who's white. I get told that you act white all the time. And then, like, kind of my blackness isn't affirmed until, like, I play basketball. And they're like, oh, my God, you're so good at basketball. Okay, now you are black. Or if I get angry, then it's like, okay, now that you're mad, you're acting black. So I've always grown up with this contrast of the way that I am compared to the stereotypes. And then for me, it's always been about what about my experience has made me different than the stereotypes? Because it's not that the stereotypes are always true, but it's also they don't come from nowhere. So I've grown up in Normal, Illinois. This is not an urban city. This is not an inner city. It's one of the nicest school districts in the state, always has been. Safe, affluent town. And I act like the other white kids who grew up here with access to all these resources and this privilege. So going through school, it was constantly people being baffled that I'm intelligent, that I'm articulate, that I'm not physically intimidating. That thrust me into a weird space identity-wise, because honestly, I would get the you act white from black people and white people. I feel like even black people are susceptible to the racist imagery we're fed all the time. So I felt like I had this dual inferiority complex and, I don't know, like a misfit complex. Like, I don't fit in completely with the blacks or the whites. I'm just in this weird in-between space. My first 3 years I taught at Champaign Central, and in that school it is predominantly black. It did have more of an inner city environment compared to what I'd grown up with at Normal. I mean, when I went through high school there, I was the only black kid or no more than three non-white kids in all my classes. But when I went to Champaign, I would have classes that had three white kids in them and everyone else was non-black. So it was very different. But even in that environment, I had the black kids who, quote unquote, acted white would come to me and tell me how hurt they were by those statements and how they were thrust in this weird place. Excuse me. But what kind of threw me for a loop was I had Hispanic kids come and say that too, that they hated when people told them they acted white. And then I had a Korean kid say it.
Wow.
Sorry. So that that kind of gave me a greater sense of security with it. But it took until adulthood to get there.
So, Chris, if you don't mind, I don't want to presume to understand why you're reacting the way you are to this. Could you give us some insight into what's going through your mind?
You know, just having time to reflect on it and just talk to different people in my life, the moment feels surreal in that it seems like American society is collectively asking how I feel from my perspective in a way I thought would never happen. I never expected society to pivot like this so drastically, so quickly. And like I said, it's surreal to be like, whoa, people want to know what it's like to be black in America, like unfiltered, like you know, straight from the source. So that is interesting. Some white people talk about to get rid of racism, we need to just not talk about it. And I feel like that's something that's just comforting for white people, because I've tried not talking about it, but it's literally unavoidable.
Normal Community High School English teacher Christopher Belt speaking with John Norton. Belt says he also learned early that making white people comfortable around him was more important than his own comfort. This is Bloomington Normal's Public Media, 89.1 FM and WGLT.org. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're recapping our series Living Black in Bloomington Normal during our Sound Ideas show today. The first black tenured professor at Lincoln College says the killing of George Floyd in Minneapolis police custody led to difficult conversations with colleagues, friends, and her children. Janine Peacher talks with student reporter Darnisha Mitchell. Peacher says friends and colleagues from diverse backgrounds simply don't understand the rage and loss after the killing of Floyd.
You know, I have had people reach out to me, my non-white friends, my non-white colleagues reach out to me and basically just say, you know, I have no idea what it's like, what you are experiencing. I am the mother of two young African-American males. They are in college. My fear, some of my trepidation, some of my anxiety, they try to understand, but I guarantee you some of the same conversations that we've had with our sons are not the same ones that they've had with their sons. And for the ones who reached out to me, they made an attempt. I came across their mind. They thought about me, and I was very appreciative of that.
How has systemic racism impacted your life?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you can't be black and say you have never experienced it. You know, being right here in Lincoln, Illinois, at Lincoln College, where just until recently have we sort of had an influx, a few more people of color to join our faculty. But, you know, systemic racism for me was just a way of life in Texas. There were stores that we could not go into. There were parts of town that we could not go into. There were conditions at our school. And I think it has sort of been the emphasis behind why I have devoted so many years of my life to higher ed, so that, you know, I help students to understand and prepare them for the world that awaits. Many of them coming from our inner city Chicago schools will say, well, I haven't encountered it. But I think when they begin to see, you know, how ill-equipped they were for college, I think many of them began to see that that was systemic, that some of the funding was not funneled to their schools. So it has just been so much a part of me. I don't know, it kind of sparks a nerve every time I think about it.
Has it ever came to moments where racism impacted how you view yourself?
How I viewed myself, oh, without a doubt. You begin to question your craft. It definitely shakes your self-confidence. In one way, it can cause you to close the door and have a moment. And then it has caused you to just dig really deep and just say, you know, I am forging ahead for those that have to come behind me.
You mentioned how you and your husband are having conversations with your two sons about racism. Mm-hmm. What does that conversation look like?
Our conversations have been, we want you to come home. As it relates to police brutality, it's you comply and then we'll complain later. One of the hardest things that my youngest one asked us, and it stumped us, and I don't have an answer then, and I really don't have one now, but he asked us, now, we do everything you tell us to do, and we still don't come home. What happens if we do all of that, and it doesn't really matter? For a moment, your heart stops. You turn and you look at your spouse of 24 years, and you go, how do you answer that? Today, we can give him an answer, because he's absolutely correct. We teach them what to do, what to say, how to act, and what if that's not enough? What if somebody still feels like their lives are not working? So we continue to teach them to be good men. Now, society will then begin to see you in a different light. And the only thing you can do is be your true, authentic self. But you're never really prepared for it until it happens. Both of them, unfortunately. definitely have heard someone use the N-word on them. That conversation was quite emotional. You know, why would he call me that? I thought we were friends, so probably too young. I didn't want them to experience it at that age, but unfortunately, that's not going to be the last time.
Janine Peacher is a professor at Lincoln College and an Illinois State University graduate. She talked with WGLT student reporter Darnisha Mitchell. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Even minor acts of racism and race-based threats can be traumatic. Sometimes they're worse than they first seem. Bloomington High School teacher Brandon Thornton has taught for 9 years at BHS. Thornton had an unusual interaction with his neighbor. He talks about it with student reporter Darnisha Mitchell in another part of our Sound Ideas recap of the WGLT series Living Black in Bloomington Normal. Thornton says at first he didn't think much of the incident, but after friends reminded him he's the only black person on the block, he realized it's more serious than it first seemed.
It started out as her just, you know, telling me to take care of my lawn with offhand comments over the fence. And then one day she knocked on my door and I let her in and we were just talking normally, like, hey, how are things going? And then she mentioned that she had fallen down trying to put up borders on the fence to prevent my weeds from growing into her lawn. I don't even have weeds by the fence. Was saying how, like, you know, we're friends and how she stands up for me and how neighbors have been talking and they're concerned with the number of people I have in and out of my house. People are talking, they think you're dealing drugs, and I always tell them, you're not, you're a teacher, but, you know, I can make things really hard for you, is the exact word she said. After that moment, the anxiety was really high because I'm not in a position where I can live alone. I have roommates. And so I was always, ever since then, like caught between this, like, what do I evict my roommates and try to make it work so these rumors can stop, knowing that I'm pretty sure she made those rumors up. But she used that to kind of like scare me, really. And then her whole thing was, as long as I promise to get someone to come look at my yard, she won't make things hard for me. So now I have Weed Man coming, and it's just like, wow, I'm spending more money that I don't have to appease a neighbor who doesn't feel comfortable for whatever reason. And she says it's because of my yard, but, like, is it?
Yeah. What emotions, what thoughts ran through your mind at that moment?
First, it was anger, and then the fear set in. Like, I posted about it right away on Facebook, and then it became fear. The words that, like, stuck in my mind and still stick in my mind is, like, I can make things really hard for you. And so I'm like, what does that even mean? Like, what the heck? And so, like, everything I'm working for, like, or owning my first house, like, and I still think about it. When I'm cutting my grass every week, I still think about, let me make sure it's nice and tidy, you know, and it sucks to feel that way. After a long day of teaching, going home to a house that, you know, people around you could feel some sort of way about you. And I don't think that is true. Like, I don't think the neighbors really got together and said, oh, I think they're dealing drugs. I think she fabricated that part to kind of have leverage. But it's still in the back of my mind when I go on runs, I'm still, like, head down, looking straight, like, straight ahead. Like, I'm not making eye contact with anyone. So it sucks to feel that way in my own, like, home, you know?
And when she says, I can make things hard for you, in your mind, what specifically does that mean?
In my mind, she's going to call the cops. She's going to call the cops and say, look, this person is against town and normal ordinance. He has all these people living under his home, which is ultimately why I had to downsize in roommates. A lot of them had plans to move away anyways. It was always in the back of my mind, like, well, eventually I have to live alone because even though I can't afford to right now, she could have that for a reason to call the police. And it's not like I'm afraid of normal police. My best friend is a police officer with normal police. But I still knew what those words meant. Pretty much she was saying, if I don't want you in this neighborhood, I can make it so. So I'm like, okay, great. So now what do I do?
What mental and emotional impact does this have on you? The impact that it has on your mental health, having these thoughts racing through your mind about how to present yourself in any situation?
I don't know. Like, I don't even think I could begin to unpack that. And I think that's the point of trauma. Like, you don't know until you, like, talk to someone. You're, like, the first person I've talked to about, like, even feeling the emotional side of things, because it's just, like, something that I've grown accustomed to. Like, I've always been, like, the only black person in all the things I do. And I always thought, huh, that's weird. And it wasn't until, like, recently where I started thinking, what are systematic things that are preventing other people of color to do the things that I'm doing.
Brandon Thornton is a math teacher at Bloomington High School and a student at Illinois State University. He talked with student reporter Darnisha Mitchell. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. Here's the final piece of our recap of a few of the best stories from the WGLT series Living Black in Bloomington Normal. Jen Brooks says her life was transformed during a history lesson while a student at Chinix Junior High in Normal. She says at the conclusion of watching the series Roots, the teacher asked for her thoughts on what our people did to your people. The now 31-year-old Bloomington Junior High teacher says it was the first time she truly felt black and othered, and it motivated her to become a language arts teacher and bring representation to the classroom. Brooks spoke with John Norton, saying that representation in practice means including books written by a diverse array of authors.
We've been reading like Huckleberry Finn and the same old things forever and ever. Like, we can teach the same idea using writings from people of color, right? So we need to give them voices in our classrooms. I try to reach out to my community members as much as possible. If I have a friend that is like really good at starting businesses, then I'll bring them in, talk to the kids, you know. I just want them to see themselves. Like, I just feel like for so long, people of color have been pushed to the background, you know, like, you can excel, but only so far. You can go here, but you can only go this far. You know, so I really would like to rewrite that narrative. Like, you can go as far as you want, and there's somebody that looks just like you who's done that.
I want to ask you something that the series co-producer, Darnisha Mitchell, when she learned I was going to talk with you, she wanted to ask this question.
Yeah.
She's wondering, first of all, what you think about Ebonics or the black vernacular. She says, nowadays people try to call it internet slang, but often in schools, black students are basically taught that it's not, quote, acceptable or proper language to speak. But it is embedded in black culture. She said she grew up using it, she still uses it, but she had a teacher who always corrected her and made her say, and her classmates say, things the proper way.
Mm-hmm.
Thoughts as an English teacher?
My thoughts as an English teacher. And so I'm still learning about this myself, but I totally think that African American vernacular is a language. And I feel like our black kids are bilingual, period. Like, that's what I think about it. And so, you know, non-teacher Jen would say, don't code switch. Why are you doing that? You know, be your authentic self at all times. But curriculum may tell me that there is a right and wrong way to speak. And I would say to that, you have to let students know what type of English you're looking for in this moment, right? So if I am writing a paper, I'm going to expect that you write that using academic language, you know? So however that looks, that's what we're going for. If we're just having a conversation and you want to use Ebonics or talk to me like you talk at home, do that. I don't think that's wrong. You know, I'm not going to diminish your language, which is a huge part of you, and make you feel as if you're inadequate or you don't have the space here. We're not going to do that, not in my classroom, right? So I would say children who speak Ebonics are bilingual. If we need them to code switch to meet the standards of writing a narrative, then we'll write your narrative using academic language, and maybe we'll write another paper using Ebonics, you know? But I would never say, no, that's wrong, because that's not wrong. Like, that's how you talk. You know, that is embedded in African American culture. It's in the novels we read. It's in the music that we listen to. That's not a wrong way to speak. It's just a culturally specific way of speaking.
You hinted at books and how maybe instead of Tom Sawyer or Huck Finn, you can use another book to teach the exact same thing. Do you have any recommendations on some of the books that you might want to use in your classroom?
Absolutely. So, of course, The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas is a really great book. Anything by Jason Reynolds is amazing. And it's not only written for black kids. Like, anyone can connect with these. My favorite book is called Long Way Down, and it is by Jason Reynolds. And it is a novel, but it's written in verse. So there are so many lessons that you can do as an English teacher from that. It's about a kid from the streets. And he watched his best friend, which is his brother, get murdered, right? And so in his neighborhood, the rules are never cry, never snitch, and always get revenge, right? And so as he is on an elevator going down to the first floor to get the revenge that he thought of getting, he's meeting people from the past at every floor who did get revenge and it didn't work out so well for them. So by the time he gets down, he has an awakening and he has to make a decision. First of all, we have to get comfortable with being uncomfortable and trying different things. We have been reading Huck Finn and To Kill a Mockingbird. As far as literature goes, we are so beyond that, and we can be so inclusive if we want to be. You know, we have to be okay with doing something that's unsafe, and we have to be okay with getting a little bit of pushback. But as long as you can, like, justify it as it being, like, what's in the best interest for our children and how they see the world, you know, I think we should really look into doing those types of things.
Bloomington Junior High teacher Jen Brooks speaking with John Norton. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT Normal, made possible with listener contributions at WGLT.org. Our website is also where you can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories and all the interviews from our series Living Black in Bloomington Normal, which came from student reporter Darnisha Mitchell, John Norton, and Ariel Jones. You can subscribe to Sound Ideas on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or NPR One. I'm Charlie Schlenker. This is WGLT.